Hey friends, it's Rich Birch from the Unseminary Podcast. This message and this entire podcast today is brought to you by Trained Up. It's an online training tool that ministry leaders like you use to train volunteers, develop leaders, and teach the Bible. Listen, today on the podcast, we're having a conversation about big data and how we can leverage technology to see your church grow, and Trained Up is a perfect example of that. It lets you create online video courses, or you can make your own, or you can use their pre-built ones. Listen, it's an amazing tool. I want you to check it out. Go to trainedup.church today. Use the code BIRCH50, my last name, B-I-R-C-H, 50, all caps, to get 50% off the first month. And don't forget, you can get a 30-day money-back guarantee. So you can just try it for 30 days. If you don't like it, return it. They're amazing people over there. Listen, I know you want to train your people. I know you want to see amazing things happen this year at your church, and it's going to require your leaders to be well-trained. So drop by today, check it out immediately after we're done listening to this podcast.
Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Well, hey everybody, welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. My name's Rich, the host around these parts. I am so glad that you've tuned in. You're going to be rewarded for that today. We've got a fantastic conversation. That I can tell you, unfortunately, that conversation is definitely not happening in seminaries today, but it really should be. And so I'm excited for today. We've got Matt Engel on the line. He is a research fellow at Leadership Network. We've had a number of Leadership Network leaders on the podcast over the years. Love those guys. They're doing great work, but he also works for a technology company. And that's really the heart of what we're talking about today, this whole idea of ministry intelligence. So Matt, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here today.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Good to be here.
Why don't you give me the story? What is ministry intelligence? When you say that, what is that? And let's unpack this for folks.
Yeah, no, that's good. So speaking of Unseminary, right? Outside of the Book of Numbers, they don't really teach you about data intelligence.
Right.
True. And so the question becomes, yet we as ministry leaders are really taught to steward well, and we have great intentions, but by and large, and again, being a pastor and having been a pastor at a really large church in the Phoenix area, mm-hmm. you know, we measure three things in church world: butts, budgets, and baptisms, right?
true.
And yet we're constantly questioning, like, hey, you know, remember the church is not four walls, the church is the people. Yet mm-hmm. we really are not actually really measuring the people. We're measuring transactions within the four walls. Mm-hmm. And so how do we get to a place where we're applying intelligence to ministry to steward it better, so that we can actually not take necessarily hard rights on any one direction and model of ministry, mm-hmm. but really improve the efficacy of that ministry from, you know, maybe 80% to the good to where we can move it to 90%. And when we move it that 10% better mm-hmm. and chase it out 5 years, we have massive implications with regards to reaching people for Christ.
Hmm. Well, let's make this really practical. Let's pretend I'm an executive pastor, a church of, let's say, 500 people. And, yep. You know, we've had some growth. Things are, you know, seem to be heading in the right direction. You know, I find churches at that size, they're starting to realize that a part of their leadership is going to have to be tracking numbers and tracking, you know, really looking at the care of our people beyond names, but actually into numbers. And how is the system working? What kind of intelligence beyond those, you know, those three numbers should we be looking into? How should we do that?
No, that's a great question. So when I first started into ministry, right, I was kind of thrust in there from God's calling and didn't really know what we were doing. And so yeah. I found myself asking sort of two basic questions constantly. The two basic questions are, tell me about the people internal to the church, and then tell me about the city, the people mm-hmm. around the community that aren't in the church. Mm-hmm. And come to find out, you know, the book of Nehemiah, he actually asked those same two questions of his brother and his friends in chapter 1:1-4. Mm. And when you look at what then the life and the story of Nehemiah was through the rest of the book, he spent the rest of the time rebuilding the people and rebuilding the city. You can chase that to Daniel, and then there's implications of that in Revelation. So that was a pretty important milestone
yeah.
that I feel like we ask those questions, but we are asking them from a largely, you know, our executive teams. Mm-hmm. Like, our executive team tells our lead pastor, hey, you did great this weekend. We had 80 salvations. But then the same executive team would not tell me that when I was preaching and I would say suck on the stage, 350 people, you know, left the church.
Right. It's like, right. Right.
So the idea here is, so from large or small, right, we typically as ministry leaders, we do this regularly. We prayed for every prayer request that was submitted weekly. We had staff prayer, and I'm willing to bet your listeners that are leaders into the church do that regularly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when I started asking the question, well, tell me about the people, they're like, well, Matt, you know, it's the biggies, it's marriage, and it's death, but nobody could really ever quantify it.
Right.
So what we decided to do is actually go through every prayer request that was submitted for 3 months straight. Hmm. And again, this was a part of our process. Every week we prayed, but nobody could actually ever tell me what specifically we were praying about in a quantitative way. So how many females are submitting prayer requests? How many males? Mm-hmm. How many millennials?
Right.
Versus boomers.
Right.
And not only that, then what are these groupings actually asking for prayer for?
Mm-hmm.
So we did this analysis for 3 months straight. We analyzed over 1,500 different prayer requests that were submitted online, in person, or through the email.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did is we applied just a single standard naming convention very objectively. Mm-hmm. So when I say objective, I didn't read into the prayer request. If it
right.
said, help me in my relationship, but it didn't quantify marriage, the term then was relationship. If it said, help me in my marriage, we used the term marriage. And so we went through that, and the top thing that popped was marriage.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing was health.
Hmm.
So we knew, and so this is where it gets really practical, right? For all of my expository preaching friends, like, again, that's where I grew up, so I'm not ripping on anybody, but
yep.
you know, you're preaching through the book of Acts.
Mm-hmm.
And you're starting to understand, hey, we're constantly getting prayer requests for people with regards to marriage. Well, where in the book of Acts do you preach about marriage? Outside of the book, you know, outside of Ananias and Sapphira, and they both
right.
die.
And that's like, not a great example.
Right. Not your pro-marriage, like, everybody go get them
yes.
type of attitude. So that, though, allowed us to actually then say, hey, this was really powerful and really good information on what was going on inside people's hearts. Like, at the end of the day, we want to help them internally because we know what happens internal comes out external.
Hmm.
And so our ability to be able to do that, then we fast forward. So then we did the same exercise January through March.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it got to be really fun.
Hmm.
Is same process, same measurements. And guess what happened? The month of during that season, the top thing that was being prayed for or asked, we were being asked to pray for as staff, was finances.
Mm-hmm.
And so, well, what happened in December?
Right. People went into debt.
You know, I was told by the church to spend less and give more, but really what I did is I probably overspent all over.
Yes. Yes.
And so now we have this, we have a unique data point. And
mm-hmm.
then when I attach not just data for data's sake, as far as like most pastors, like we used it as an illustration,
mm-hmm.
you know, 50% of marriages, blah, 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 which was bogus anyway. That's not even a real stat. But anyway, what we would do is we would use data as an illustration. We rarely actually tied analytics to it. So
right.
analytics is actually taking data with research and grabbing it and making insights out of that. The analytic and the insight is actually the nugget that you want to be able to test and measure against. And so what we did is we attached research in our state where the month of February was actually one of the highest months for divorce filings. So then we have financial problems, divorce filings, and we also knew that the top two things from our internal church perspective was with regards to relational health was sex and finances. Intimacy and finances were the top two sort of juggernauts.
Mm-hmm.
How you got there and how you talked about it doesn't matter. And so what we did is, again, every church should be measuring engagement, but they're
mm-hmm.
actually measuring the three B's, butts, budgets, and baptism. So
mm-hmm.
we wanted to actually say, hey, with this information now in Q1 of our
mm-hmm.
sermons,
mm-hmm.
let's now take this and preach on stewardship and generosity in November.
Right.
And then we're going to really be intentional about it. We're going to show everybody that, hey, last year in through January through March, this is what people were praying for. This is why we're preaching on this topic right now.
Right.
Not coupling to Christmas or anything. And then we hook up some level of programming to it. And guess what? Attendance grew. Programming engagement grew, mm-hmm. and we chased it through that following next year, and the request for prayers around finances was actually less than, and we had roughly the same statistical number of submissions for prayers. So again, if we're looking at engagement, that's data that actually helped us improve our ministry, and we actually were sitting on mounds of it without ever looking at it.
Right, without ever kind of assessing it, getting it into a system where you could actually deal with it, and then continuing to just stare at it. Is there a difference between, because I found, so first of all, what I appreciate about what you're talking about here is driving people to, you know, use, you know, a level of sophistication around engagement, around the kind of back and forth conversation. It's trying to take some of the art of communication out and, you know, put in a bit of science, which I think is positive. The thing I've struggled with, you know, when we've attempted these kind of things in the past is the difference between data that's just collected from like actual activity, people showing up to things, people like clicking on, you know, certain articles on their website or watching certain videos, that sort of thing, where it's like activity based versus, mm-hmm. You know, survey based, or what you're saying, like, you know, coming out of prayer requests, or, you know, where we're studying them, where we're actually, they know implicitly. Now, they may not with prayer. Prayer might actually is a great place to get data because they probably aren't thinking, oh, they're trying to pull data out of this.
Yeah.
But when you just ask people, hey, what do you want to talk about at our church? Mm-hmm. You know, you tend to skew the data because they know you're listening as opposed to what they're actually clicking on, what they're actually, you know, exploring. Are you finding, how do those two types of data interact with each other? And as we think about leaders and how we think about leading within our church?
Yeah, I definitely think there's two sort of approaches. There is the element of, and we're going to talk about this, but the mm-hmm. element of accessing other data sets that mm-hmm. exist out there right now that anybody can go out and look at, and I'll make sure you get those links, mm-hmm. is, you know, we can look at demographics. We can look at a whole bunch of stuff about our city. The ability of getting first party data, meaning that I asked for a survey from my people, what I found is that when you want to actually get actionable mm-hmm. insights mm-hmm. is you need to develop a culture that says you're going to be responsive to the results.
Right.
So it literally is the element of like for certain things that we did in the church, like we asked three questions every time and everybody knew that we were going to ask those questions. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that the quicker we spun the results back, because this is typically what happens, we collect data, we ask for information from people, and we never show them anything back.
Right.
Well, that's like a consumer coming in and just consuming mm-hmm. church world. Like, how often do we tell people, get off the bench and go be the church? Mm-hmm. Yet we get frustrated when all we do is consume. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing for when we're asking for information to steward our ministries of mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. Hey, mm-hmm. we surveyed, you know, 500 people at our church, and we had 400 people submit their surveys back. And here were the results. Off this is what we're going to go do. Mm-hmm. And that then incites the 100 that didn't respond to get their voice heard. But mm-hmm. it also gives everybody a roadmap that says, hey, this is why we're doing some of the things that we're doing. Hmm. You might not agree on the how, but everybody will cling to that idea of the why. Hmm.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, this, you know, this whole area obviously is, you know, I'm sure there's people that are listening in today that are like, man, I'm not sure how this applies to my church. How am I supposed to collect this data? What should I do with it? Where do I put it? Who do I need to find in my church to help me with this? You know, this is classically one of those like, gosh, I went to seminary and took Greek, but, you know, I don't know anything about what you're talking about today.
Right.
What would be some first steps that churches should be thinking about?
So one is it's just the importance of stewarding our people. Like mm-hmm. at the end of the day, if we're going to be accountable to the people, we need to know them well. Mm-hmm. And that know is sort of there's a core process that we talk about. It's the ability that Rich, you and I connected with each other. Mm-hmm. You and I now know each other a little bit. Mm-hmm. Based upon that know, you and your listeners are now matching me with something in their head. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The catalyst then, so it's connect, no match, and then mm-hmm. catalyze. Mm-hmm. The better we know and match, the better we can actually catalyze them to take on whatever God's calling them to do. So that's the core process. Mm-hmm. And the super focused intentionality is on how can I, as a ministry leader with the capacities and resources that I have, do a good job knowing and matching my people. Mm-hmm. And that means that we just need to increase our ability to know them, which means that we have to have a level of infrastructure and a rationale mm-hmm. against what are we going to collect and why are we going to collect it. Mm-hmm. And most churches do, like, right? I mean, through the giving portal, through the child check-in, through the new visitor stuff, most people do that. Mm-hmm. But my questions probably dig a little bit deeper in, like, how'd you find out about us? How long mm-hmm. have you been coming before you opted in? Mm-hmm. Like, the average person, that retention rate of a new visitor that attends three times is 80%. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yet where does the majority of church world spend their energy on welcoming new people? It's after visit one.
Right.
If they were smart, they would actually focus on visit two mm-hmm. to get them to three, mm-hmm. knowing that that's the momentum that's going to carry forward anyway.
Right. Absolutely.
So those are some pieces that I would start to structure. Mm-hmm. And then the other piece, the other piece of that is what I've seen and what's been cool is you get up on Sunday and say, hey, we need children's ministry volunteers. Mm-hmm. Like, we beat people up that should never be involved in children's ministry. Right. Let's face it, I'm one right. of them. Like, yeah. Give me a roll of duct tape and I'll go to town in the children's ministry.
Yes, but right.
You don't put me in there to, you know, work on right. flannel boards.
Yes.
And but this is actually what we found is this idea of ministry intelligence is really unlocking the church to be the church. Mm-hmm. People in the pews do this for a living.
Right.
And would love to serve in this capacity.
Right.
And I've already seen it. We've got some of the best minds in the world mm-hmm. that are now serving at churches mm-hmm. in this realm that a church is just they're benefiting and now the city is benefiting because they have a talent that's been unlocked because they were being told to serve in children's, but they shouldn't have been. Mm-hmm. So
let's pull apart, you know, gave one example there. Let's pull apart the idea of kind of the new here guest. Cause I think you've hit on a one that I think a lot of people can relate with. We know we have our certain amount of attendance we have, you know, we know that we do these new here gifts and a lot of churches will actually have clarity on, you know, what percentage of those, you know, what's the comparison between those two. How do we push that data even further? How do we go about collecting, you know, and making that a more robust process, even if it's just that piece of the puzzle? How do we go about making that a more, you know, a ministry intelligent process?
Yeah, great question. So some of the things that we've already started to see that's worked is like just basic asking. So I'm sure you're probably familiar with, your listeners might not be, but like the Net Promoter Score.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, it's typical industry standards, like yep. 1 to 10. You know, how likely are you to recommend us X, whatever yep. that church name is?
Yep.
And that's a really practical tool that could be implemented at multiple stages within ministry.
Right.
That right there, we had one church that did it. And here's the typical church metric for success, right? If they're giving, if they're serving, if they're in a group, and if they're bringing people, mm-hmm. that's typically what we would say is, wow, that's a great Christian.
Right.
What we found is that a church that we were working with over in Ohio mm-hmm. delivered the Net Promoter Score and delivered it to that segment of people that yep. were all doing all four activities. And they found, based upon the Net Promoter Score, that those people were actually distractors and would not recommend the brand. Now, here's the
That's
interesting
amazing.
Part is when we asked why. We got now we're getting you know, the qualitative data back. We got quantitative data. Let's support mm-hmm. it with qualitative. When we started asking why, we found out that there was the emphasis was, I'm comfortable. I don't want to give up my seat.
Interesting.
So even in that cohort, now they deployed that same thing to new people that had only been in the church for 3 months, and they were off the charts as far as advocates for right. that church.
Right.
So it is interesting that's a simple tool that's available, that it's one question, you yep. know, 0 to 10, how likely are you to recommend us yep. to, you know, out there? And you can get amazing insights on your people mm-hmm. with regards to that. Mm-hmm. And that allows you to steward that ministry better. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we're seeing that's kind of on the cutting edge of stuff is this idea of, how do we use tools that are readily available mm-hmm. for church leaders to actually get sort of a predictive view of mm-hmm. their people? Mm-hmm. And that idea is still relatively new. We've been doing this now for a couple, 3 years now, working with only just a handful of churches on, hey, you know, church, you've got a podcast. There are mm-hmm. people that are listening mm-hmm. to your podcast through mm-hmm. mobile devices. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to bet majority of churches that are following the podcast probably have a Facebook page.
Yes. Yep.
Most of those churches don't have any idea that there are other corporations and companies making millions and millions of dollars on the fact that this church just has a Facebook page and the 500 people that attend that church are following them.
Right.
Right. The ability for us to actually get smarter about our people really, I think, comes down to where people spend their time, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We want to where your treasure is, there your heart is also, out of mm-hmm. Matthew and out of Luke. And you know, I think that the ability for us to acknowledge treasure mm-hmm. as equal to time, that's mm-hmm. the most precious commodity we have on the planet, right? Mm-hmm. How we steward it is mm-hmm. is all we got. Mm-hmm. So if we can get to the place where, man, they spend an hour on the weekend, they're spending 2 hours in a small group, and let's say let's say they're praying for 30 minutes a day. mm-hmm. That, okay, great. But yep. audit the rest of their time.
Right.
If you've got a husband and a wife, I'm going to flip the entire pendulum, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. the female is spending a disproportionate amount of time on social media looking at single men's photos.
Right.
How healthy do you think that individual is relative to the relationship with husband to wife?
Right.
Now, again, it's not creepy in that sense of, oh, wow, you know, Matt is doing this. Mm-hmm. But in aggregate, we can actually begin to say, wow, hey, you know, based upon the people that are 5 minutes ahead of me, mm-hmm. that were doing A, B, and C, got divorced. Mm-hmm. Matt, mm-hmm. You're doing A, B, and C. There's odds are you're heading in that direction.
Right.
It's the ability for us to stop playing defense and start playing offense with regards to our stewardship of our people.
Intention.
How do we help them get upstream mm-hmm. from the woulda, coulda, shoulda moments where they're coming into my office saying, hey, my wife just left me and I'm bankrupt. Mm-hmm. Yet this individual was in my small group, right? Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. It's surface level things but we could actually get smarter about some of this by using some of these capabilities that are kind of emerging that are missionally aligned.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, I know, you know, there's even just a baseline, you know, kind of Facebook advertising. It's amazing if you just poke around in there a little bit, how granular you can get even on intentions like that, you know.
Yeah.
Considering moving is one of the, you know, you can today you could buy people ads on, you know, on Facebook for folks that are considering moving in yep. your community. And that's not rocket science, you know, that's off the shelf, you know, $5 will unlock that, away you go. And, you know, that's obviously scratching the surface. Intention analysis is super powerful, and you can see how, you know, that'll make a big difference to us in the long run. That's fantastic. Well, why don't you tell us about glue? Who is glue, and why should we be thinking about glue?
No, that's good. Yeah. So Glue is just a tech company.
Yep.
Up here in Colorado, and just recently moved up here from Phoenix, and, yep. And really have been looking up around what does growth at the individual level look like, mm-hmm. and how do we begin to wrap technology to support and facilitate relationship? God mm-hmm. designed us to be in relationship. Otherwise he would have stopped with Adam. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was like, nope, we need more than just one. So right. Let's build community.
Yep.
And so, but how do we now take technology and support community, support relationships mm. in a catalytic idea mm-hmm. relative to superficial things like, again, you know, it's the equivalent of MySpace and Facebook. Those are mm-hmm. digital transactions, but mm-hmm. actually face-to-face engagement is the key. Mm-hmm. And we know that, mm-hmm. but what about the gap? How do we support the gap? And
right.
typically that gap engagement is really facilitated by it, like a know and match engine. So mm. Glue is sitting on the largest data platform in the world that is missionally aligned to help facilitate know and match. Mm. The better a pastor and leader know their people, the better they're going to match those people with their next best thing.
Hmm.
Right. Cool. So it's the equivalent of, and through the work with Leadership Network and my hat on that side, we've been able mm-hmm. to work with some really interesting churches that are basically, we're unearthing this idea of how do we take data and use it for good mm-hmm. through that lens. Mm-hmm. Technology is not good or bad.
Right.
God designed technology. Mm-hmm. It's really the ability for us to apply it in a kingdom-oriented fashion at scale mm-hmm. that can help the 50-person church in downtown, you know, Charlotte mm-hmm. to the 45,000-person church in Alabama, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. The ability to do that is capacities that unlock what they do and help them move from, again, that it's all about it's all about the efficacy of the ministry. Mm-hmm, so that's really kind of the pulse, is this ability for us to move the needle on face-to-face relationship through a supported know and match engine mm-hmm. that increases this idea of engagement. We mm-hmm. know that if that happens, we can chase it out 5 years and we're going to see longitudinal growth. Wow. Mm-hmm. This person was financially distraught and, you know, and headed toward divorce. Mm-hmm. And they started doing these things. And we see in the trend data now for longitudinal growth, mm-hmm. those things started to decline. Mm. We're going to start repeating those behaviors for right. more people that looked like that. Mm. We're right now in ministry, we do a really good job of sort of the moist thumb in the air on if we're doing good or not.
Right.
This is taking it to a whole new level.
Right.
Because of the visibility that we now can get with regards to knowing our people and stewarding them well. Mm-hmm. It's the equivalent of, you know, hey, 18% of your congregation is predictive of divorce.
Right. Probably want to talk about
catalytic.
That. Right, exactly.
You know, the top three things that millennials care about right now with regards to faith, according to Pew, is marriage, parenting, and a social justice cause. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Living a religious life is fifth on the list. Yet right. what do we do in church world? Hey, come on Sunday.
Right, it's right, like, right, right.
Nope, I'd rather own a home than come on Sunday. And that's the data. So mm-hmm, it's like, mm-hmm. so our ability to be able to increase that know and match gap that we currently have and steward it well is like an accountability that I think we all owe it to each other.
Interesting. You know, you touched on this earlier, but, you know, how can churches leverage existing data sets to understand what's happening in their community today? What, and again, put this in the context of, you know, somebody who, you know, by definition, people who are listening to this podcast, they tend to be a little bit technically, you know, minded. You have to navigate iTunes and, you know, you got to subscribe yeah. on Stitcher. So, you know, they're not a total, but not somebody that's advanced. They're just like, hey, I want to get a better sense of what's happening in my community outside of my church, to try to use that data to, like you say, know and match, you know, what we're doing with our community.
Yeah. So one thing that I think was interesting, and I had this conversation with a friend, a mentor of mine down in San Diego, who's the lead pastor of a large church down there, mm-hmm. is he's like, Matt, hey, all this sounds good. Like I'm tracking with you, but we don't really have a problem in the context of that. And I was like, mm-hmm. hey, that's great. He didn't know this. And I happened to live in San Diego for a little bit on some other stuff. And so I knew a little bit more about his church relative to where it was.
Right.
And I'm getting to the question, but basically what it was is it was like, so tell me a little bit about your church. And so I started giving him the prompts of like, he knew that I knew his church, mm-hmm. you know, is you're looking at 80% white, you're looking at upper middle income as far as people that come and then I was like, well, tell me about the city. Well, I happen to know that that city is located in a very ethnic diversity. Mm-hmm. It was like 80% the other direction as far as ethnicity and diversity.
Right.
And the median income in that community within probably like right around 2 to 5 miles within the church was right around 65,000. Mm-hmm. And so my question back to him in acknowledging those two realities, that's the church leader just knowing their people mm-hmm. and doing some rough view mm-hmm. and then knowing the city around you, that's census data and demographics data. Anybody can get that. Mm-hmm. Then the question that I had for him, which is kind of what I have for everybody, is mm-hmm. sort of, is that winning?
Right.
If I'm getting, and I'll say it this way, and it's coarse, but if I get all the rich white people,
right.
yet I'm in a population density that has income of, you know, 50,000 and it's multicultural and the socioeconomic stratas are all evenly split, I don't know if that's winning. Mm-hmm. I'm not one to judge. It mm-hmm. just, I think Jesus was pretty clear in the Great Commission, work on your Jerusalem and then go. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. sometimes we're gapped even there. So that's like a really practical, simple thing mm-hmm. that is all free and available by just looking at the census data
right.
and then literally being objective in the span of looking around the congregation and saying, am I reflecting my community?
Right.
And that's right there is that's basic.
That's cool. Is there, so obviously census data is one of them. Are there other data troves that you think churches aren't using that they should be? I think that's having a pulse on exactly, you know, even the, you know, basic information around your community. It's amazing how it's true. I found that with so many church leaders, they don't really have any sense of who lives in their community.
Right.
But are there other kind of, you know, treasure troves of information that we should be using to, you know, explore that's publicly available?
There's a couple of different, URLs. There's one that's based around philanthropy, mm-hmm. and that gives you a good indication of where people are spending their philanthropic dollars, where they would tend to give, mm-hmm. Which is great alignment for those churches that maybe have a school hooked to them or yeah. other things. That can be super insightful. There's a couple of other ones that get into like Data USA. Mm-hmm. It gets into like commute times. Imagine if you knew that your community typically commutes over an hour away.
Right.
To work. Would that be an opportunity for somebody to lean in from a ministry perspective? And maybe that's where podcasts really start to mm-hmm. play out, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hey, you're going to spend an hour in the car. Why not get fed while you're doing that?
Right.
Instead of being, you know, listening to all the other chaos that exists in the world. So those are some really unique things that are available that anybody can go look at,
right?
Without sort of breaking the bank, and then you can get, like I said, then you get into the more sophisticated things of like the data platform that we have that we're working mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. Leadership Network on is, you know, what is a good small group leader look like according to sort of metadata,
right?
What is somebody who's going to leave my church look like? What we found, it was interesting. We mm-hmm. did some research for a couple of churches, and we found that that they had their active people that were currently attending the church, mm-hmm. and then their inactive people. And we looked at the divergence, mm-hmm. and they had more from a percentage standpoint, more people that left the church had a higher predictability of divorce than the people that were in the church.
Interesting.
That one little nugget literally helped cause them to say, hey, we need to double down on our relationship stuff and our marital things that we're going to do in ministry and figure out how do we talk about date nights to our congregation. We're not going to change anybody's, but how can we give resources to those people mm-hmm. to see if we can't reduce that, knowing that the people that left had right. that high score.
Right.
So clearly we missed that opportunity to minister to them at their place and time.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, this has been we've just been able to scratch the surface here. This has been a great conversation. Is there anything else you want to share? I know there's a lot we could talk about, but there's anything else you want to share before we pivot on to kind of wrap up the episode here?
You know, one thing that I remember back in the day from ministry was like, I was told early on, information plus application equals transformation. Mm-hmm. I was told that early on, hey, give somebody some information, help them apply it, and they're going to be transformed.
Yep.
I think what we're seeing right now is this emerging idea of it's information plus application multiplied by relationship equals transformation.
Mm. Oh, that's
cool. The church's wheelhouse is relational.
Yep.
God designed that in us. Mm-hmm. We are gapped on information and a little bit better on how to apply it. But mm-hmm. if we can do those two things better, we own the space of social capital and transformational movement. We just need to be catalytic in the idea of getting increasing our deficiencies on that information application side. So that's probably one thing where I kind of anchor to is like, you're right. We as the church own the relationship. Mm. We need to get really smart and increase our deficiencies on the other two, where mm-hmm. if you look at the corporations and all of the other worlds, they thrive on that and desperately desire relationship.
That's good.
So our ability to lean into the other direction, we're the kingdom come right at that point. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the last thing I'd say.
This is the Unseminary Podcast, stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Well, we're going to jump into the lightning round, that part of the episode where we ask everybody that's on the show similar questions. I'm so honored to have Matt Engel with us today. Been a great conversation just all around data. How do we use that to connect people, to, you know, really see people build, you know, deeper relationships. And this has been a great conversation. Matt, what is an online resource? Now, I'm looking forward to this because I know you're the guy. What's an online resource that you're using these days to help you in your ministry?
Yeah, so a lot of this stuff we're pumping out through the leadnet.org leadership network website. That's going to be your main go-to. The glue, the GLOO.us, has got the data platform information on it. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the easiest things that churches can do right now is literally use Google Trends.
Yeah,
and fantastic. They can, within their geo, within where their church is at, they could literally type in a couple of different terms like marriage, divorce, premarital support, and pornography, and literally see the trends of mm-hmm. what people are searching for within their community. Mm-hmm. Looking at that just gives you a pulse of what's going on in aggregate out in the Google world. So those are probably some easy, quick wins.
Yeah, absolutely. If you haven't checked out Google Trends, it's a powerful tool. They have a lot of information there, and it can be great even when you're something as simple as you're, you know, a communicator and you're trying to wrestle through what's the next thing to talk about, you can actually dive right down and figure out, okay, what is it that people in your community are searching on? And just underlining that, it's a fantastic tool for sure.
Yeah.
What's a book you've read in the last, I don't know, maybe 6 months to the year that shaped your thinking and ministry?
Yeah. So here's a good book. Who Can You Trust by Rachel Botsman.
Okay.
That book is really the personification of where does trust originate from, and really what we're living in right now. A lot of people think that technology's been the sort of main disruptor of everything. Think Uber to the taxi cabs, Airbnb to Best Western, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. YouTube to the network channels. Mm-hmm. Really, it's not been technology. Technology's had a part in it, mm-hmm. but really what's emerged is this idea of distribution of trust.
Mm-hmm.
We were told back in the day, don't get in a car with a stranger.
Right.
Now,
now we willingly do it.
The largest transportation provider on the planet does not own a car.
Yep.
And I'm willing to get into a car with a stranger because of a distributed model of trust.
Yep.
That's a compounding idea when
powerful.
It comes to the idea prior to that, which was institutional trust.
Mm-hmm.
I think the church is going to start seeing people are no longer affiliated with this institutional trust mindset, meaning I trust Ford because my dad did, my parents did, everybody did. I trust Ford. This is literally like, nope, where's Yelp? Oh, right. I've never heard of this restaurant, but 5,000 people have said they really enjoyed it. I'm going to go check it out.
Yes.
That one. And then this idea around the big data stuff is a book that just came out called Everybody Lies. Mm. That's just a really interesting view with regards to what people actually do versus what they say.
Mm-hmm.
So two really good books that I've really enjoyed diving into.
That's cool. That's great. What's another ministry you're looking to that inspires you?
So I'll give you three examples. Sun Valley Community Church down in Phoenix, Chad Moore, lead pastor
church.
There, is crushing it with regards to this idea of ministry intelligence and how to steward big data
mm-hmm.
to actually improve the engagement and the ministry efficacy he's stewarding right now.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, Brian Tome over at Crossroads in Cincinnati is mm-hmm. really doing an amazing job
mm-hmm.
reaching some of the hardest people to reach according to the data
mm-hmm.
emotionally with regards to faith. So
mm-hmm.
a nugget there that's really we're starting to kick doors over on that.
Mm-hmm.
New Spring Church over in South Carolina is doing a great job beginning to think about digital content in sort of bite-sized episodes.
Yep.
Knowing that, you know, 2 minutes worth of content spread out over the span of 4 months
mm-hmm.
could be transformational for that individual to walk through that versus showing up for 8 hours on a Saturday,
mm-hmm.
you know, thinking that's going to be beneficial for them and him and his spouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those are three that I think are really doing well.
Good. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive, who would you want to get that with and why?
So here's a guy that most people might not know of. His name's Sangeet Chandri. Out of MIT's Platform Labs. And mm-hmm. he's really been one of the chief architects on providing language to this idea of platforms revolution.
Mm.
What is sort of revolutionizing and really breaking modern day pipeline economies? And mm-hmm. I say pipeline thinking Best Western hotels to mm-hmm. Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
The largest accommodation provider on the planet has no property. They do not own property.
Yep.
Imagine the church as that equivalent,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the largest X with none, with no actual thing like that. The
mm-hmm.
ability to be a platform where somebody can produce and consume value for the greater good.
Right.
But so I've read his books, and it's just been one guy that I think is like he's helping provide language to something that the church was really designed to be.
Right.
And we've just tried to fit into the other economies.
Very cool. Well, if you, I know, you know, working in, you've got a couple different hats, a lot of different things going on. That takes a lot out of you. What do you do when you just want to kick back, relax, have some fun there, Matt?
It's the typical pastor answer, right? But I love my wife. Right. I love spending time with her. We do date nights regularly. Okay. You know, we have our couch time, our date night time, and our annual abandons that we do. I love my kids. We spend time together. Anything college sports related. And then nice. another fun thing that I like to do is I like to collect and sort of restore classic cars.
Oh, nice. So, wow. Very cool.
So yeah, that's our fun.
Very cool. Well, Matt, I appreciate you being on the show today. If people want to kind of take this conversation to the next level, say, hey, this has tweaked my interest. I want to learn more. I want to lean in. Where should they go? Where should we be sending them today?
You know what? I would say either leadnet.org, mm-hmm. the GLOO glue.us page, or you know, my email and cell phone are available. So that's probably going to be the easiest way.
Great.
We love what we're doing. We love helping churches, and if we can do this well at scale, you know, the kingdom's really going to be impacted for good.
That's great. Appreciate being on the show today, Matt. Thanks for your time, man.
Yep. Thanks, man.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com, and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch, or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.